Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Matt Kinnear, Editor-in-Chief of IL, and we are talking about the source. It is Thanksgiving week. This is the Friday after Thanksgiving, which is a glorious day for so many folks that don't work in the retail space. For those of you that do, we appreciate all that you sacrifice in order to bring this Black Friday to fruition. Hopefully, everybody stays extra safe this year. I know that I am going to limit my holiday shopping on Black Friday to laying on the couch, checking out NLLShop.com on Fanatics. We'll get to that a little bit later, but first, Matt, we are thankful, and that's what we're talking about. That's the story of the week. So how are you feeling other than grateful?
I am feeling grateful. I'm feeling thankful. I am pumped for the holidays. My house is basically covered in Christmas decorations already. You know, that's one of the having two kids and being stuck in the house. Basically, we've been trickling out our decorations over the past like 2 weeks. So we put up something new almost every day. And I think we have basically a full house of Christmas stuff, and it's not even Thanksgiving yet when we're recording this. So it 2020, feels, it's weird.
It feels like the anti-Christmas before Thanksgiving crowd has been very quiet this year. I don't know if you feel the same way. I expect that you do, or suspect that you do, on the basis of the fact that you are decorating already. But yeah, it was early November. Christmas stuff started to make a significant appearance, and I didn't hear a whole lot of folks pushing back.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, do whatever you want this year. You know, it's kind of like it's a free pass, just do whatever the heck you want. You know, 2020 has done some weird stuff to us, so why not? But Terry, one thing that I'm going to do a I'm grateful for, I just kind of realized this not too long before we started recording here. My 10-year anniversary to Inside Lacrosse just passed.
Ah, happy anniversary.
So well, yeah, it's my dad's birthday is when I started, November 15th. So, you know, I opened LinkedIn for the first time in a very long time, and it kind of hit me with an anniversary message. So that's how I found out. But I am very grateful for 10 years working inside Lacrosse and working in this sport.
When you think of November 15th, 2010, what comes to mind?
Gosh.
I remember one of earliest like big things that we all kind of like collectively worked on was the announcement that Marquette was adding varsity lacrosse. Wasn't that, it was the day of our Christmas party that year. So it would have been like roughly like December 18th or something like that. So a little bit right around a month after you started.
So it's funny because actually the year, I'm not sure if it was 2 years ago, we did the axe throwing for our holiday party. And I remember texting Joe Amplo, like every year of the holiday party, I think of Marquette adding men's lacrosse. That's kind of my, like, whenever we do that IL Christmas get together, that's what I think of. When I think of,
do I have my years mixed up?
I don't, maybe. Was the next year?
Yeah, that's, I have a sneaking suspicion because now that I think about it, did you work in the old office for like a month and then we moved into our current office?
No, I was never in the old office.
Okay, then never mind.
I interned in the office in Towson.
Right.
But I remember Danielle Bernstein emailing me before I started about doing the Wheelbarrow flag football tournament.
Yep.
You know, I guess you guys went down there and had a team in that. It was one of my first kind of IL interactions. And then my first day was, the first thing I ever did for Inside Lacrosse as a full-time employee was, it was Headstrong Mustache Madness. And I took pictures of all you guys with your mustaches. So that was my, that was my start.
A very normal way to start any new job, taking photos of your coworkers' mustaches.
Obviously what I think of that 10 years ago though, it's just how much different everything is. Me personally, I was living, you know, I still hadn't gotten my house, you know, I'm from Baltimore, so I was just living in my buddy's spare room. When I came back to Inside Lacrosse, I was single. I did not have kids. And the landscape of media was, you know, there could be a whole podcast about how different the landscape of media is. So we'll save that one for another day. But a great 10 years.
Well, congratulations once again. And we are going to start by talking about what we are thankful for. And I'll give you the baton first. I know that you had a conversation today. We're recording this on the Wednesday prior to Thanksgiving. It's planning to run the Friday after. You had a conversation today that gave you your idea for one thing that you're very thankful for.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously I think it's kind of important to be appreciative for what we have and what's going on. You know, obviously it's the time of year to do that, but even more important given the landscape that we're in. And you kind of posed the question, I want to say 2 weeks ago, about what is positive in lacrosse. And I've kind of been thinking about that intermittently since you posed that question, thought it'd be a great thing to discuss here, you know, in front of the listeners. But the conversation you're referring to today was with Matthew Lestava, the former Bates attackman, who is now enrolled at Fairfield. And one of the things I'm grateful for are second chances. And, you know, the pandemic obviously shut off a season for a lot of these student athletes. And, you know, there's a lot of guys who their college career is over because of that. But, you know, there's a lot of guys who are getting tremendous athletic opportunities and tremendous academic opportunities in the wake of this. You know, so Lestava, last October, so that would be 13 months ago, he broke his leg in fall ball. Pretty gnarly injury. It was one of those things that, you know, he decided to come back to Bates. He wasn't going to try to do the whole unenroll and re-enroll to continue his career. He did, and then his, you know, senior year gets cut short because of the COVID pandemic. Then what happens next? You know, obviously the NESCAC, there's some different rules there in terms of their ability to return. So in steps Fairfield, which is actually a school that has a number of fifth-year players. That's going to be a storyline heading into this season. I think they've kind of vaulted themselves into CAA contender status with some of their fifth-years. But in comes Fairfield. They have a one-year MBA program, essentially a one-year. It's a little over a one-year MBA program that he's going to take advantage of. So, you know, he's going to play on an awesome attack line. He's going to be playing with Dylan Beckwith. He's going to make an impact at the D1 level. He's going to get the chance to prove himself, this kid from Western Mass. In the D1 level, you know, he was under-recruited guy, Coach Lasagna found him and really helped turn him into an exceptional player, the leading scorer of all time at Bates. And now, you know, he's going to kind of exit his college career with an undergrad degree from Bates, one of the great institutions. He's going to have an MBA from Fairfield. He's going to be able to play Division I lacrosse and compete for a championship. Second chances are an awesome thing. Just 12 months ago, 13 months ago, you know, he was wondering if he was going to be able to play lacrosse again because of his leg injury. Now, you know, obviously there's still some things to be decided and there's some questions about the 21 season, but he's in a great spot right now and really thankful for that. And there's so many other kids who are in the same boat. You know, Michael Sowers, his Princeton career has to end and now he gets a chance to play at Duke. You know, there's so many of those stories in lacrosse. I'm just thankful that we get to share those stories on Inside Lacrosse.
Second chances are a great thing to be thankful for, and you mentioned that a couple weeks ago I posed to you, what's one positive thing that you have latched onto? That was an idea that I discussed with Kyle Harrison that prompted me to inquire to you, and then when recording a podcast about the new PLL Assists program that will drop on Monday earlier this week, Kyle and I talked about exactly that, and I'm going to kind of co-op his answer as the first thing that I'm thankful for coming away from 2020 and a year with a lot of hardships. But one thing that I think is a positive step is I think that I personally and Inside Lacrosse collectively over the last, say, 5 to 7 years have been very intentional around our conversations directly addressing the cultural norms, stereotypes, issues of racial diversity and inclusivity that are germane, if not unique, to the sport of lacrosse. And I think that for a good portion of that period of time, there were a lot of stakeholders within the community who either didn't fully understand the scope of the problem, didn't take it seriously, didn't agree with it, whatever the case may be. And I think that that attitude is all but gone. It's not to say that the solutions have been found, and it's not to say that the community surrounding the sport is altogether healthy when it comes to these issues, but it is to say that I don't think the issue of denying that it's a problem is very prevalent any longer. And I think that's a function of what happened in June and July with people of color within the lacrosse community voicing their experiences that spotlight the cultural issues. And I think that's really positive. I think it's happened for a number of different reasons, but the thing that I think was probably most substantial is that in the way in which this has improved, I think it's largely improved on college campuses. And I think that it has largely improved because college coaches were quickly made aware of the role that they played and the responsibility they bared in setting the culture of their locker room around this issue. And I think a lot of college coaches, men's and women's lacrosse coaches at a lot of different levels, divisions 1, 2, and 3, NIIA and club, all took it upon themselves to say, we are at the very least going to facilitate conversation and in so doing, show our players that this is an issue we take seriously. And again, it's not going to mean that every locker room is anti-racist immediately, but it is an important step in the process toward creating a sport that is perceived by many people outside of the community of people who play it, as well as many people inside of the community, as a sport for white people. And the idea that both within people of color, communities of people of color and white communities, that is something that people want to address, is something that I am thankful for coming away from 2020.
That's great. And I think you've seen it very overt in our coverage in terms of that this conversation is important, very intentional. When you look at our last few magazine covers or last several of our magazine covers. And that actually kind of parlays a little bit into my next one, Terry. It's just pro lacrosse. It's something I'm very thankful for, partially because I think of the role that pro lacrosse has played in this conversation, you know, with the Premier Lacrosse League kind of putting, whether it's the Black Lives Matter movement or, you know, the highlighting Native Americans in terms of the front of their broadcasts during, you know, their kind of summer session that they had. Major League Lacrosse, you know, I think the steps that they have taken since, you know, a pretty unfortunate kind of turn of events that was that happened at their championship. And then National Lacrosse League, I think, has definitely been, you know, really a leading voice in all of these conversations. You know, I kind of watched a little bit of Deputy Commissioner Jessica Berman's conversation with Lyle Thompson last week. You know, I know she kind of brought that experience of kind of using sport for good from her time at the NHL. That was a key part of her role there. You know, so I think they are kind of being leading voices in this. But just the pro lacrosse, I think, took a very strong leap forward this summer. You know, I think the Premier Lacrosse League, you know, having that format where they were basically playing every night, you know, it was that late at night time slot, but it was kind of perfect for everyone who was sitting at home and wanted some sports to watch. I think that really vaulted it forward and gave some legitimacy to the lacrosse community, you know, because I think it was the most that people in the lacrosse community actually got to sit down and watch pro lacrosse throughout the whole history of lacrosse, you know, because a lot of times those games are on Saturdays. Yeah, you hear about it, you see the highlights or whatever, but you're at a club event. You're kind of out with your kids team or you're coaching someone. So I think kind of putting it in front of that many eyeballs, you know, outside of lacrosse, but also just kind of legitimizing it to the lacrosse community was fantastic. And the NLL, you know, I know their season got cut short, but when I think of that league, I think of just kind of the professionalization of the league in terms of the steps they're taking from business development. Like I said, kind of the efforts they're making in terms of with the Native American communities and highlighting them. You know, I think that they're really kind of a showcase for kind of the aspirational aspects that pro sports can be, you know, so I'm really, really in a positive mindset about pro lacrosse, the future of pro lacrosse and the present of pro lacrosse right now.
So I can build on that a little bit. I'm going to go a little bit lighthearted with this thing that I'm thankful for. It's also not going to be specifically germane to 2020. I am thankful for the shot clock. And this is something that I was really confronted with over the weekend in a conversation that I had with Dan Kaplan, when obviously the shot clock has been a permanent aspect of pro lacrosse for 20 years, but the fixed shot clock, the possession clock in men's and women's college lacrosse is, you know, something that's only 2, 3, 4 years old. And Dan Kaplan is one of the biggest lax rats you will ever meet. And he was saying, I almost always, when I'm doing work, have a lacrosse game from YouTube streaming while I'm doing something else. And he's like, it's gotten to the point where I really, unless it's like a championship game or a great game that I know about already from the pre-shot clock era, if it's not a shot clock game, I skip over it. And I am not somebody that skips over lacrosse games. And I think he's exactly right. And not to take this to negative town, but it does shine a bright spotlight on the fact that with respect to men's lacrosse, basically we should have had two seasons of shot clock and we lost two-thirds of one of those seasons, which means that of the available number of games that we should have gotten with a shot clock just kind of to get us through this 2020 off season, we basically lost a third of that inventory. And that's just such a bummer. But again, in order to take the bus back to positive town, I'm just going to say the shot clock is awesome and I'm glad that it's here and it's not going to go anywhere. And I'm really glad for the shot clock.
That's awesome. And nothing you said about Dan Kaplan was surprising there. The fact that he's just spending all of his time watching games. Shout out him. I'm thankful for him. I'm thankful for the entire events team. Dan Kaplan, Tommy Lyons, Megan Clothier, so many people at Inside Lacrosse who contributed to the events and the entire staff altogether. But kind of in the wake of a series of events and monumental work by them to get them off and create a safe, fun experience for kids, special shout out to them.
That is a great segue into talking about our advertiser, for whom we are very grateful. It is the National Lacrosse League and its new relationship with Fanatics. Obviously, we just talked about a trio of people who are very passionate about lacrosse. You and I are very passionate about lacrosse. I would assume that if you're listening to this, you are very passionate about lacrosse. And so as a result, who better to tell to get their official National Lacrosse, oh my goodness. You did such a good job of reading this last time. I'm tempted to just hand it over to you, but no, I'm going to be a professional. Here we go. For the first time ever, you can get official National Lacrosse League fan gear from Fanatics. Fanatics is the official shop for the National Lacrosse League. Whoever you root for, wherever you live, whichever team's apparel you want, you can go to the NLL Fanatics shop and find it. Show your team pride every day with certified NLL apparel, including hoodies, shirts, half-zip sweatshirts, long sleeves, hats, scarves, and of course, jerseys. I think that's huge. I think that that has been a substantial step that Pro Lacrosse has taken in recent years. The availability of jerseys. Everybody wants to wear their favorite player's jersey. I have a very unique approach to jersey wearing when it comes to the two teams that I have jerseys for. If you are a listener of this show with any regularity, you probably know I'm a Tottenham Hotspur fan and a Baltimore Ravens fan. Being from Cleveland and being a Ravens fan is a difficult situation. One of the ways I reconciled it is I wear Ravens players' college jerseys. It speaks to the fact that I like wearing jerseys, and I know I'm not alone. I know that there are some people who draw a hard line in the sand on this. I have to believe not many of those folks are NLL fans, and as a result, I know that it's a big deal that you can get your official NLL jersey from the NLL Fanatics team store. It's the only place to buy official National Lacrosse League fan gear. Do what we did and get yours in time for the upcoming season. Save 25% when you use our promo code IL20 at shopnll.com/IL20. That's shopnll.com/IL20. Promo code IL20 to get 25% off. One more time. shopnll.com/IL20. Promo code IL20. What do you think? Did I save that ad read?
That was excellent, although I still question your jersey choices in terms of wearing the college jersey. I know the explanation you've explained to me many times, but I still question it. You got to wear the colors of your team, not their college colors.
Well, I told Zakevich on the podcast earlier this week that was why I got Seals gear, is because it was purple and I felt like Purple Friday. I've been left out of it for 10 years. This was like an opportunity for me to, you know, continue having one foot in the sandbox, one foot out.
It's funny, actually, last week, this is a complete tangent, but I actually just sold a jersey on eBay that I had tags still on, mostly because it's an awesome jersey, but I just have no scenario in which I'm going to wear it. But I had a Mark Messier New York Rangers 1994 Stanley Cup jersey that was just basically sitting in my closet collecting dust. I do not even like the Rangers whatsoever. I'm a Capitals fan.
But you Mark love Messier, Messier
is just
right?
the ultimate captain. I love Messier. So I got rid of that one, but I kept all my Capitals jerseys. I have a few of them. And then the only other random jersey that has nothing to do with anything is my Dean Youngblood Mustangs jersey that I kept. So shout out to the 1980s classic Youngblood, which is, in my opinion, one of the greatest sports movies of all time. But we are completely off the wagon here. Thankfulness.
Well, the ball is in your court. So what are you thankful for?
I am thankful for the class of 2022. I think maybe there's a little bit of recency bias in the sense that we spent a lot of time this fall watching them pretty closely and, you know, tracking their commitments, because there have been a lot of commitments in that class. But just the talent in this class, and I think more than that is just the charisma. You know, I think there's a lot of players that you can identify as future college stars, not just from their playmaking ability, you know, and certainly that is the case, but just the kind of the whole package of, you know, charisma, the willingness to be in the spotlight, you know, the willingness to kind of, you know, that confidence that you don't see from players who are that young. You know, I'm talking about Brock Bearman. I'm talking about Charlie Johnson, who's going to be going to Duke. You know, obviously we all know Joey Spallina, Dominic Petrimala. You know, there's obviously a theme of some guys here who are sons of coaches, and I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. But it's just a really phenomenal class that I'm excited to see progress, you know, and I'm excited that the way that they kind of took the recruiting rules, and also this year specifically the pandemic, they kind of took it in stride. And, you know, it's just been really kind of refreshing to see the way that they've put in work this summer and this fall. A few points about them, and I made this point to you on the sideline at our latest invitational, the one that we held in Delaware a few weeks ago. The goalie play for the class of 2022 and younger is just absolutely phenomenal. And the shooting, I feel like, has gotten so much better when you look at those classes. You know, when you look at the 2022 class compared to, you know, classes of kids that age a few years ago, it's just really exciting, the future of the game. And, you know, I attributed that to a lot to the individualized coaching, but also, you know, the YouTube era, the era of all these tutorials online, and these kids have kind of grown up in that. And really, it's just such a great product on the field, and I'm so excited to see these guys and these young women continue their careers and be college stars and future pro stars.
I am grateful and thankful that the Iroquois Nationals were extended an invitation to the 2023 International World Games, and they accepted it, and barring any surprising, unforeseen outcomes, they will be playing as men's lacrosse gets its debut on the global multi-sport stage for, well, the first time, which is what debut means. I'm grateful for a number of reasons, some of which are obvious. Certainly everything that was said about what the Iroquois Nationals bring to every event that they are a part of, both in terms of the pageantry, which is incredibly special, whether you've seen it or not. I mean, you know, the type of thing where I've been fortunate to go to a couple of different world games, and there are some other cool ceremonies that occur. The one that stands out is the haka, which is a New Zealand tribal dance, and it just attracts so much attention when they do it before each game. But it's different in the sense that, you know, first and foremost, that's not germane necessarily to lacrosse. It happens at other competitions, and people are familiar with it. But when the Iroquois Nationals show up to play lacrosse, regardless of where you're from in the world, and especially if you're not from the United States, where you're probably involved in the sport because, I don't want to call it a novelty, but because of, you know, reasons that are different from the typical American individual, it's just so, so special to come face to face with that. And I think the fact that they're going to be at a global multi-sport competition is going to be so special for the non-lacrosse athletes who don't know much about the sport in general, probably don't know that much about the Iroquois Nationals, and are going to get an opportunity to experience it for the first time. And it's not just about the athletes. Obviously it is. Any any sporting event is going to be primarily about the athletes, but it's also about the observers from the IOC and the broadcast folks, whether they are from NBC or not. The opportunity for the Iroquois Nationals to display who they are and what it is that they bring to the game on that stage. You know, it was a situation that resolved itself on the normal course of these things very quickly. It was a positive resolution for all parties involved, and it was something that very easily could have not come to light until later, and as a result of not coming into light until later, might not have been able to bring about a positive resolution. And so for all those reasons, just a really, really special and really grateful that that came to fruition the way that it did.
And obviously we are very lucky that we get to interact with the Native American community, because so few people in this country really have ever seen a Native American, you know, in person, outside of their stereotypes of what a Native American is. You know, so the fact that we get to interact with them and see them perform their sport at such a high level is something that to always be thankful for. And on a somewhat related note, you know, my next thing to be thankful for is the lacrosse stick. And I say that because, you know, we talked last week about the lacrosse sixes and what is the essence of lacrosse. And, you know, it's a stick and a ball is truly the essence. With a pandemic, you know, a lot of people have been spending time by themselves or only with their families. You know, you can still have a stick and a ball in your backyard and play lacrosse. Yes, it's not lacrosse in the sense of, you know, there being a winner and a loser and teammates and all the things that come from team sports, but the essence of it is still there. You know, and you talk about the Native American community and the PLL put out that great documentary, and it goes into that in some detail there, but the stick and its connection, you know, we talked with Zed Williams after the PLL championship and kind of him clutching that stick after being the MVP of that PLL championship. You know, the stick is something really special to every lacrosse player. It's one of the, you know, most customizable, one of the most kind of individualized, you know, tools that there are in all of sports. And the fact that, you know, during these times when you might be a little bit isolated, you might feel like your connection to the sport isn't there because you're not seeing your teammates every day. There's still the stick. There's still the stick and there's still the ball. And you can grasp onto that stick and kind of remember, you know, what it is that you're waiting to get back to. So the stick is another thing that I'm thankful for.
It's medicine. I mean, it makes perfect sense. We talked to Dolly Paulus about this at the beginning of quarantine, and it was really meaningful in terms of what the stick can provide. And I think for those that may have only understood it on a superficial level prior to this experience, maybe they understand it on an emotional level a little bit better. And I think that that is absolutely something to be grateful for. This is something that I'm grateful for that's equivalent to your comment about the class of 22, but I'm grateful for the recruiting rules. We've talked about this a handful of different times in a handful of different places recently. With the exception of the pro lacrosse that occurred in a relatively small window of time this summer, really the only lacrosse that has been played since March has been club lacrosse, whether it was in the summer or the fall and the associated individual showcases that kind of run parallel to that. As a result, there have been some very noticeable outcomes. For example, the speed at which players are committing compared to prior years is well increased. That's a conversation for another time. My point is, if the early recruiting rules hadn't changed, I can't imagine how many 7th and 8th graders would have, if not committed, had serious conversations with college coaches about being a part of their program. Because again, one of the reasons that this is happening so quickly is because there's an absence of everything else that's going on in the space. And that absence, without the rule changes in that void, I really do wonder, you know, if things had, you know, obviously there's like a limit to which this can develop, but like, given the fact that Brendan O'Neill is a freshman in college right now, and he committed when he was in March of eighth grade, and then Eric Spanos, who is a signee to Maryland in the class of 21, committed a couple, you know, earlier than that, and ended up becoming the youngest commit probably ever in men's lacrosse history. Who knows how far it would have gone over the course of the intervening 2 years before essentially the, you know, rules changed and then the subsequent shutdown. I can't imagine, you know, it feels like basically the top 30 Division I programs would have their class of 2026 literally already done right now had the recruiting rules not changed.
In preparation for this, I texted a handful of coaches, and one got back to me like seconds after I sent a message about like, what are you thankful for? I'm thankful I'm not recruiting 14-year-olds. Was like just completely off the cuff. So I think you have a lot of supporters in that one. The next one, Terry, I feel like I'm going to steal your thunder a little bit here, knowing kind of what you have to say. But
we can talk about it together.
My last
partnership.
Well, my last thing that I'm thankful for is kind of pandemic silver linings is what I'm going to call it. And maybe this is just the, you know, trying to be positive. Maybe I'm clutching at it a little bit, but you know, I'm thankful that there are aspects of the game that could be better or thought out differently as a result of the pandemic. And I don't think this is, you know, kind of, you know, betraying his trust by kind of recalling this conversation. But, you know, I talked to Steve Kadelka this week, you know, the great Lynchburg College coach. And, you know, he talked about, he kind of took the first little bit of, you know, the pandemic time as a bit of a sabbatical. And, you know, the way he put it was like professors get sabbaticals. Like rarely does a lacrosse coach get a chance to have a sabbatical.
Yeah. I'm going to interrupt because I feel the exact same way. And I've actually said that a few times. I mean, I started at Inside Lacrosse in October after I graduated from college. And so I haven't had a spring where there wasn't a lacrosse season that I was involved in as a professional. Like it hasn't existed. And so as a result, like, I guess calling it a silver lining is a weird way to phrase it, but I agree with you. I mean, I agree with Coach Kadelka. The spring definitely had a feel like a sabbatical.
But I think the kind of the longer term of that is I think in general, coaches are going to be a lot better as a result of this pandemic. You know, I think there's aspects of, you know, a lot of coaches, not all of them, but a lot of coaches are control freaks. I think most of them, you know, who are control freaks will admit that. You know, I think there's aspects of learning to delegate and learning to distance from your players that have been positive and will ultimately be productive. You know, I think there's aspects of kind of empowering the leaders on your team that have had to happen naturally with the, you know, lack of contact and lack of, you know, being in the same kind of physical space. That's going to have some longer term positive effects. I think the work life for some of these coaches, realizing that, you know, some of this kind of recruiting circuit can be done watching film, can be done through relationship, you know, and word of mouth, as opposed to having to stay out in the 90 degree heat and, you know, eat your little Subway sandwich and do that thing every weekend in the summer. I think that's going to be beneficial for the sport in terms of the health and well-being of the coaches. And then one thing is kind of the, you know, maybe if the season doesn't start until March or mid-March, maybe that kind of shift towards February, early February, people start to rethink that and realize that, hey, maybe we can just kind of backload with a few midweek games. That's something that we've talked about for a long time as being one of the detriments to the sport is kind of the early start in the spring. And then, you know, it's kind of revealed some of the good people in the sport. You know, I think that while these coaches are navigating the 2021 season, they're going to have to band together in a lot of ways and work together in a lot of ways. Luckily, this is kind of one of the areas that, you know, lacrosse's close-knit community is really going to kind of come into play of, you know, teams are going to need to fill schedules with games and they're going to need to drop teams and they're going to need to add teams and they're going to need to kind of have creative solutions. And these group of men's and women's coaches will be able to do that because of the relationships within the sport. And I think the pandemic has only revealed how positive a lot of those relationships are.
Yeah, well, you did steal my thunder a little bit, but I'm going to let it slide because I do think it's well said and definitely a point well taken. Yeah, for me, it's the way that we were able to utilize time that we otherwise wouldn't have had at our disposal. And for me, I think the development of our video evaluation platform, which I've spoken on this podcast previously, is super important in terms of creating a new type of business for Inside Lacrosse and creating access for players who aren't in the normal club lacrosse ecosystem that intersects with our events platform to get not only some of the benefits of participating on our platform, but also even more valuable feedback from a qualified college coach about their performance. And so I think the fact that we were able to get that off the ground, working on it in earnest in April, May, June for an August 1st launch is absolutely a pandemic silver lining and something that, you know, I'm really grateful for coming away from 2020 and excited about seeing what it looks like in the future.
And Walter's excited about your time together, right?
Exactly.
You get to see
Walter
every day and play with him while you're recording podcasts.
It was shortly after the pandemic started that he made his first appearance on our conversation with Jeff Tambroni, and he definitely has made more than one appearance ever since. So I do my best to muffle him, unfortunately holding a pillow in between his incessant barking and the microphone only goes so far. So I think we will end our thankful podcast with an apology to the listeners, but trust me, I've got it worse.
Well, hey, you know, you got to get yourself a proper office now that we're almost a year into this thing.
True. Even then, I'm not sure that it'll be enough. His bark has the way of, I don't know, echoing through the neighborhood and people blocks away being like, oh, Walter's upset about something. It's outrageous. But Matt, we have decided to end the source by spotlighting something that's on the website and something that we're working on that's coming down the pipeline. So once again, I will turn it over to you. What is currently up that you want to make sure folks don't miss, and what is coming that you want to make sure folks are aware of?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I would like to just kind of in general highlight all of the pieces, the women's pieces about, you know, we call it the Fall All Access Series, which a little bit of a misnomer because we're not physically there with the COVID-19 pandemic, but highlight those stories in the sense that, you know, there's a lot of really interesting women's lacrosse programs. The most recent one being the Northwestern program, which obviously is a very storied history. But, you know, I don't know if people realize that they got, you know, a really marquee transfer in Sammy Mueller from Virginia. There's just, this is one of the more interesting women's lacrosse seasons than I can think of coming up. You know, obviously you have a North Carolina team that is a super team in terms of players returning and players they already had on their roster, plus some new additions. So I would highly recommend just kind of read up all those stories because it's a really, really good snapshot of the women's college lacrosse landscape going into 2021 that I think, you know, in the flurry of all the transfers and all the people who are returning and who aren't, there's a lot of information in there that you just may have missed that you should definitely look to educate yourself on.
And in that vein, I'm going to point people toward your behemoth update of where things sit in terms of the likelihood or viability of the 2021 season that we posted on Thanksgiving morning, Thursday. It's a long read, but it's very comprehensive and includes some original reporting, including a conversation with the commissioner of the Ivy League, as well as you mentioned previously in this podcast, some folks from the ODAC that I think shine a spotlight on not just whether a season will happen, but how a season might happen in the spring of 21.
Thank you for the plug, Terry. It was a labor of love. It is a behemoth, and it got a little bit longer than I thought, but there's a lot of stuff in there. So I would appreciate anyone who reads it and wants to reach out to me.
And as for what is forthcoming, I know we are working on one of the most fun features that we do every year.
Yeah, so the top 50 players in college lacrosse, it's a you know, mixed gender, men's and women's. You know, we essentially look at the players with the most impact, you know, on their team. And, you know, I think it's pretty clear who maybe the number one and two are. If you've been following the college lacrosse landscape the past 2 years, and particularly the last season, it's a lot of fun. It's something that we're going to post very soon, you know, very shortly after this holiday here. And something that, again, kind of going back to what I just said, like, it makes you realize how much has maybe happened during this, you know, period of, you know, we call it sabbatical, but it really was a tremendous amount of movement in terms of player movement and who's back, who isn't, who's playing football, who's not, who's here, who's there. So a lot of information in there as well. So really excited about that. And Terry, one thing I just kind of wanted to, you know, when we're talking about looking forward, what are we usually doing kind of, you know, this day before and kind of the week after Thanksgiving?
We are copy editing the Face Off yearbook.
Yes, we are. And, you know, I still think we're not doing that right now, you know, which will come as a disappointment, I think, to a lot of people who are listening. But we're kind of just exploring what we're going to do in terms of our season preview content. You know, it wouldn't be fair to any of the teams to kind of give a watered down version of what the 2021 season is going to look like when we don't even know what teams are going to play and who they're going to play and you know, even some of the personnel decisions that have to happen. So please interact with us and maybe share a little bit about what you want to see when it comes to that. But we are committed to doing, you know, a lot of that same content. Just the format will be different and the timeline will be different, as is everything during this pandemic.
And as far as another thing to keep your eyes peeled for, just the promotional holiday promos coming from Inside Lacrosse. On Black Friday, we are going to be promoting a magazine subscription opportunity that is a can't-miss deal if you're interested in receiving copies of the magazine over the course of the next year. And then separate from that, starting on Cyber Monday, we're going to begin some you know, kind of like multi-stage promotions of our video evaluations. So if it's something that you're interested in, but maybe balked at the price, we're going to have some discounts around there. But I really just do want to put in a good word for the utility of this product. Not only do you get qualified coach feedback on your performance in a particular game, but you also get an indication of where at least one qualified evaluator sees you fitting in at the next level. So if you're a 2021 or a 2022 trying to determine, where do I fit in as a college lacrosse player? This is a helpful tool. And coming away from a fall in which a lot of lacrosse was played, but some folks weren't able to participate, and into a winter when who knows what the rate of commitments and types of commitments are going to be, I think it could be really valuable for a lot of different players, boys and girls, all positions. So be on the lookout for that, and we'll be promoting it as we get through the holiday season, because in addition to being able to discount it, I do think that it's the type of thing that will serve as a really nice gift for your high school lacrosse player who's looking to get better and looking to identify what is the appropriate next level.
Well said.
All right, well, that'll do it for this edition of the Inside Lacrosse podcast. As always, thank you for listening. It is uber important to say that given the theme of this podcast. If you like what you heard, tell a friend, leave a rating and review. Let us know on Twitter. He's at Matt Kinnear. I'm at Terrence Foy. We are at @inside_lacrosse. We are at Inside Lacrosse on Instagram. We'll be back next week with more Inside Lacrosse podcasts, including a conversation with Kyle Harrison on Monday about PLL assists, just in time for your Giving Tuesday initiatives. So once again, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.